minutes ago. Looking real good in my passport photo. Oh,
no. Amateur Traveler, episode 604. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and majestic mountain scenery, Roman ruins and Venetian cities, Orthodox monasteries and vineyards, as we go to the country of Montenegro. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Without further ado, let's talk about Montenegro. I'd like to welcome back to the show Gary Arndt from everything-everywhere.com, who's come to talk to us about Montenegro. Gary, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. I've always wanted to be on the Amateur Traveler, and this is a wish come true.
We had some trouble trying to count up the number of times that Gary has been on the show, but we think this is his 12th appearance, not to mention the 200-some This Week in Travel episodes that we have done together, as we've been co-hosting that since 2009.
And I should say, now that it's my 12th show, I get my card punched, and I think I get a free show.
I believe that is true. I believe that is true. Yes. Why are we talking about Montenegro?
Because it's a really interesting place, and I recently spent 10 days there in February of 2018, and I think it is going to be one of the next hot regions in Europe, because Europe's running out of hot regions. And I think Montenegro, and especially the Balkans, former Yugoslavia in general, is kind of the next big thing, because it's very affordable, it's opening up, it's become very safe. In Montenegro, in particular, of the non-EU Baltic countries, I think really has some of the best prospects.
Well, and I should say we've done two shows on Montenegro before. One was way back about 6 years ago with Ralph Velasco, and then we did one much more recently, but that was really the Peaks of the Balkans hiking trail that was in Albania, Kosovo, and Montenegro. So take a listen to that if you want to go for a hike. What kind of itinerary do you recommend, Gary?
It's a small country.
Yes.
It is small enough that it's a small country, but not so small that I would call it like a micro state. So it's not Andorra, Liechtenstein small, but it's bigger than that. Although actually they do compete in the micro state games of Europe.
There are micro state games in Europe.
Yeah, it's like their own little Olympics for San Marino and Monaco and I think the Isle of Man and these places. And I think Montenegro is actually the biggest country in the micro state games.
You've got to draw the line someplace. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. I had been to Montenegro twice before, but both of which I didn't stay overnight. So the first time I took a day trip from Dubrovnik, and we went around the Bay of Kotor, which is that area, including Budva, is the biggest tourist attraction in the country by far. No real doubt. Kotor, for if people aren't aware of it, is basically, it's very similar to Dubrovnik. It is built on a natural bay, probably the best bay in the Mediterranean. And if you look at it on a map, it's like three bays in one. You enter this bay area, and then there's another entrance, and then there's another entrance. And then Kotor was a walled city. It was controlled by Venice. It's kind of tucked away deep, deep, deep in this bay. But it's the water's relatively deep, so ships could get there, and it was extremely well protected. For an enemy ship to get there, it would have been extremely difficult. And it's a very popular cruise stop now. A lot of cruise ships are going there. Yeah. And I went in February, and Kotor was kind of dead. I mean, it's really the off season.
Right.
And it was the second time I was there. So very different from the first time I was there, which was really kind of at the start of the high season when the ships are coming in. And I was told during the high season, it's not uncommon to see multiple ships, maybe 3, 4, 5 cruise ships in Kotor Harbor in one day. So it can be very, very busy in its peak season. I don't think it's quite Dubrovnik level. I think Dubrovnik is, which is not far away, I should add.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at that, and it's a little less than 2-hour drive, it looks like.
Yeah, and that 2-hour drive is a lot of winding and driving around the bay.
Right.
If you look at a map, you'll notice there's a choke point that's very, very narrow. And there's a ferry that crosses there. And if you don't take that ferry, the ferry's like a 5-minute drive, you know, float across. It's very quick, but it's 45 minutes to drive if you don't take the ferry. It's a very popular destination. And then the whole area, of course, I have to point out, is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, the Bay of Kotor. And again, it has a really deep history, this whole area. This used to be the province of Dalmatia back in ancient Rome. So you'll find a lot of history in this region going back. Now, I stayed in the town of Herceg Novi, which, if you again look at the map, is near the entrance of the Bay of Kotor, not far from Kotor itself, but closer to the Croatian border. In fact, so close, there's a little peninsula that they split down the middle. And I guess it was a big debate as to where to draw the border. And we went up on this ridge on this peninsula, and there's this church that technically, I think we were in Croatia. There was no border controls or anything up there because it'd be really hard to cross the border. But so you're very close to Croatia. The people from Herceg Novi, when they fly in or out, are usually flying out of the Dubrovnik airport. Mm-hmm. And it's actually closer. The Dubrovnik airport is closer to Herceg Novi in Montenegro than it is to Dubrovnik, just to give you an idea. And it's also close to the border of Bosnia as well. So if you look to where the Bosnian-Croatian-Montenegrin border three-point is, right, it's not far from there. So in a weird way, even though I was staying in Herceg Novi at this really interesting Yugoslavian-era Joseph Tito probably was there to cut the ribbon hotel spa, and they have changed nothing. So it's not like a retro, we're bringing back the communist era. They've just never changed it. The cheesy wood paneling from the 70s and stuff like that. I was staying there, which was really kind of interesting. But that's really tucked into the southwestern corner of the country. From that point, we were able to explore the whole country and do day trips everywhere to give you an idea of how small it is. So anywhere you stay in the country, you can pretty much visit anywhere else on a day trip. I can pretty confident in saying that. And the area that I was in, because of the bay and the mountains and everything else, the roads are fine. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're pockmarked or anything, but because it's so mountainous, you're just going to be doing a lot of winding driving anywhere you go.
Sure.
And that's just the reality. It's no different than driving through the mountains in any other country.
Yeah, well, and it sounds like it'd be similar to driving up the coast of Croatia, which probably more people are familiar with.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. At the start of the show, I said, I think this is going to be kind of the next big thing. And one of the reasons for it is because it has that Mediterranean coastline.
Right.
And it's beautiful. And there's a lot of Russians after the fall of Yugoslavia came here and bought up property because it was really cheap. And even though they're not part of the EU, Montenegro, because they're so small, just unilaterally adopted the euro. So they use the euro and Croatia doesn't.
Interesting, even though Croatia is part of the EU.
Right. Now, Croatia, I think, will eventually adopt it at some point. Mm-hmm. But as of 2018, when we're talking about this, Montenegro uses the euro and Croatia doesn't. And it's also a lot cheaper. So if you wanted to go to Dubrovnik, and Dubrovnik has become kind of expensive because it's kind of become the trendy place to go in that region.
It's the last new big thing.
Herceg Novi is not far away at all, which is in its midway roughly between Dubrovnik and Kotor. So you can very easily drive, and we're talking like an hour drive maybe to either one, is a really good place to set up camp.
Interesting. Well, and the airport for Dubrovnik isn't in Dubrovnik. It's a third of the way along towards Montenegro.
Yeah, I'd say it's about halfway between there and Herceg Novi.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit closer to Herceg Novi. The people of Herceg Novi go to Dubrovnik to catch flights because the other alternative is to drive to Podgorica and then catch a flight from there to Vienna or wherever.
Okay. So what are we going to see while we're down here?
Well, as I mentioned, the Bay of Kotor is probably the biggest attraction. So you definitely have to do that.
Well, and you surprised me because I thought it was Kotor that was a UNESCO World Heritage Site, not the whole bay.
No, it's the Bay of Kotor, which is the site.
Okay.
The star of that, obviously, is the city of Kotor.
Sure.
But the Bay of Kotor itself. And so there are some interesting island monasteries in the bay. There's Roman ruins I stopped at as well. The city of Risan, R-I-S-A-N, which is on another lobe of the bay. Again, maybe like half hour from Kotor. They have some Roman ruins that are there, which goes back to when it was the province of Dalmatia. So there are definitely other things in that area. The other thing I got to do this time that I didn't get to do before is the bay is ringed by mountains. So we actually drove up to the top of some of these mountains. And on top of Kotor is Lofsin National Park. I think I'm pronouncing it right. Lofchen National Park, which is way up on top of the mountain. And most of the visitors to Kotor are not going to visit this place. So I assumed if you went there on a cruise ship, that would be your day trip, right? to take a bus up the mountain. And it's an extremely windy, a lot of hairpin turns because it's a very steep mountain. But it gives you a fantastic view of the entire bay. I mean, you, from up there, you just have a commanding view of everything. And I had never been up there before. And it was really, really neat. And I would be willing to bet only a very small percentage of the people that visit Kodor ever actually bother to go up there.
Yeah, I recall Ralph recommending that when we talked about Kotor previously. You mentioned something about island monasteries, but we didn't quite finish that. Where am I going to see island monasteries, or can I see them?
Yes. I believe it's called Ostrovo, O-S-T-R-V-O. And then there's another one. I think it's St. Mary's. There's a good chance it can be called St. Mary's, no matter what it is. But if you look at a map of the Bay of Kotor, there's like a butterfly-shaped lobe that's kind of the main one. And then there's two islands. They're like the only two islands. And you can really only get to these places in the summer.
Okay.
So when I was there, there weren't boat services going. But even if you don't go there, they're just a very interesting Orthodox. One is an Orthodox church, the other is a monastery. And they're just sitting on these very small islands in the bay.
And I assume we're talking about Our Lady of the Rocks.
Yes.
Okay.
Our Lady, referring to Mary.
You got the Mary, okay.
I get partial points for that.
Absolutely.
I have a couple friends who spent a lot of time in Montenegro, and they were there in the summer, and they said it's a great, because, again, very few people visit this place, because so many of the visitors to Kotor are coming by cruise ship. But I think that would be, the next time I come here, that's probably going to be near the top of the list of things for me to do.
Okay, and the other one looks like it translates to St. George's Island.
Correct.
I don't think I would even try and pronounce the word that I'm looking at here because it has characters that I don't recognize. They've got D's with lines across them, for instance, which I don't know what that means.
It's interesting. So the history of Montenegro, when Yugoslavia fell,
right,
there was a country called Serbia and Montenegro.
Right.
Right. So this used to be part of a country along with Serbia. And then they broke away. And for all practical purposes, Montenegro and Montenegrin, the language and the church and everything else, are Serbian.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But since they've become independent, now, of course, their language is called Montenegrin. I do not know. I tried getting an answer out of people. Like, what's the difference? And I think it's the difference between American and Canadian.
Well, what I generally hear down there is that with all of the countries in the region, that Serbo-Croatian is called different things in different countries, but it's basically the same language. And
right.
What defines what's a language versus a dialect versus whatever is, as I've learned from linguistic books, more politics than science. And so you can call the language whatever you want to in your country. So
I was there ostensibly for a festival. It's called the Mimosa Festival. And
okay. The
mimosa, not the drink, but it's a flower
that
actually flowers in February. It's a yellowish flower. And so there were some journalists there from Bosnia, from Serbia, and Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a luncheon with them, and they were all speaking a different language. And at one point, I just asked, like, well, you're all speaking to each other. You have no problems with that. What do you call it? What is the language you are speaking amongst each other? And I put a thing on Instagram. I put up an Instagram story. A very popular singer. She was from Croatia. She was doing a performance for the festival. And I said, it's such and such. She's very popular in Serbo-Croatian circles. And someone said, well, Serbo-Croatian is offensive. I'm like, well, what do you suggest I call it? But you're right. There is no, everyone kind of has, calls it their own thing. Something else I realized when I was there is this is something which is really unique to Europe. So Norwegian and Swedish and Danish are kind of pretty much the same, right? I mean, one can go to another country and it's kind of mutually intelligible.
If there weren't national boundaries between them, we would call them a dialect, is what I have heard. Yeah.
Exactly. And so there's a couple other cases like that in Europe where they call it a different language, but really it's kind of the same language.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't say we speak American. In Mexico, they don't say they speak Mexican.
Right.
Brazil doesn't speak Brazilian. And I think it has to do with the fact that we were colonies and we all kind of know where it came from. So we're not trying to claim it as our own. Whereas in Europe, because everything's been there since time immemorium, there's competing claims to things and national identities that get tied up into it that we don't have in the new world.
Well, and in this case, we're talking about a region where Montenegro and Serbia, before they broke apart, for instance, were fighting to get the gang back together. They didn't say they were Serbia-Montenegro. They said they were Yugoslavia and that there were rebels who were trying to pull the country apart. And so they were fighting Croatia, for instance, and they were fighting Bosnia or whatever. So I think we may have to go a generation or so to get rid of some of those hard feelings, probably more than that, before some of this settles into a academic debate.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the whole politics of that time period. That always does come up when you talk about this region.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a case in a lot of countries where what sticks out in everyone's mind is the last bad thing that was in the news. And so Bosnia in particular, to a lesser extent, Serbia and some of these other countries, we still remember what happened in the 90s. And so there are people that are like concerned, oh, is it safe? It is perfectly safe. It's 20 years past the war. It would be the equivalent of going to France in the 60s and being worried about the Germans invading. Right? That was 20 years after World War II.
That is true.
It's the same thing. It's in the past. It's done. It's a very safe country. No problems whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out of the bay a little bit and along the Mediterranean coast, the biggest tourist city in the country by far is Budva.
Okay.
U-D-V-A. Mm-hmm. And this is the resort city, really kind of a city built around tourism. They're Orlando, or maybe they're Branson, Missouri, but it's where a lot of the resorts are. And I should also add that in Budva, and I think in Tivat, which is also another city on the Bay of Kotor, there are some super high-end resorts that are being built.
Okay.
And there are some real high-end mega yacht installations that are now going in. So there's a whole one and only compound that's being developed in Herceg Novi, and it's still under construction, but it's villas and everything else, and it's going to be super, super high end, which is another reason I'm saying this is going to become, I think, quite quickly, the next big thing in Europe, because there aren't a whole lot of affordable places on the Mediterranean. And so a lot of this stuff is getting scooped up quickly by high end resorts.
Now, it looks like Budva does have an old town still.
It does.
I would say it also was Venetian by the architectural style.
But I don't think it's as known for its history quite as much as Kotor is.
Okay.
There's just all this other stuff, the beaches and everything else. And again, it was a big draw for Russians, and I think it still kind of is, but also for domestic tourism within Montenegro and in the Balkans of people that want to go to the beach.
Okay.
So it's kind of their beach destination. So you're right. There is an old town. I actually got to visit the old town and wander around. Yeah, I don't think it's quite the same draw that it is in Kotor. I mean, it's Europe. Every place is an old town.
Okay. And when we say beach, we're talking a European beach, not a white sand beach.
Correct.
More stones than sand, it looks like.
Along Budva, you're going to have a sand beach.
Okay.
Which is why I think it's such a popular destination. Along a lot of the coast, you're not going to see that, obviously.
Yep.
But in that area, yeah, you'll definitely see sand beaches.
Okay.
So Budva and the Kotor area, if something is well known in Montenegro, these are going to be your two biggest things, right? Because the cruise ships stop there. Budva has the resorts. It brings in a lot of people. But there's a lot of other really cool things in Montenegro as well. And the thing that really surprised me the most was Skadar Lake National Park. And if you look at a map, you'll notice a very large lake in the southeastern corner of the country that is shared with Albania.
Mm-hmm.
And in the northwest corner of the lake, there are all these islands and these peninsulas that snake around. And there is a viewpoint there, which is one of the most stunning viewpoints I have ever seen in Europe. I was there and I took photos. It was my desktop wallpaper for March 2018. If you go to my website, I can give you the photo to put it on the page for the show. But it's like really astonishing. You have these cylindrical islands that almost look like volcanoes, and you just have these many different layers plus the water. This should be on the cover of every guidebook for Montenegro. I don't know why it isn't. It's absolutely stunning. And people just, I don't know, if they just don't know about it, it really was an amazing viewpoint. And it's one of those places as well where this one spot where everything just perfectly lines up. And I have a feeling in the future there's going to be a lot of photographers that are going to that spot because it just is really amazing. The capital, Podgorica, as European capitals go, is pretty small. I wouldn't really consider a huge tourist destination in and of itself, but I think it might be worth, if you're going to spend a significant amount of time in the country, to spend maybe 1 or 2 days there. And one of the most interesting things we found is that despite being one of the smaller countries, Montenegro is actually home to one of the largest vineyards in Europe.
Really? I mean, I'm not surprised they have vineyards. Again, they go all the way back to the Roman tradition, but I wouldn't think they had that much land. It's a very hilly country.
Podgorica is located in kind of a big valley.
Okay.
And that's where it's located. So this actually goes back to the communist days. And it was a decision, you know, a top-down economic planning decision.
Sure.
And they created this winery. And it's still around today. The government still owns a big chunk of it. And it's called Plantaze. Oh, man, I hope I'm not butchering it. P-L-A-N-T-A-Z with a mark above it. But you can't really help but notice it. If you drive around the city, you're going to notice just these vineyards that go on forever. And it's the result of this communist era central planning system. The vineyard was privatized. They produce a great deal of wine. And one of the interesting thing was, is if you go there to do a wine tasting, the storage area for all the wine and the area where they do the wine tasting is in an old military bunker where jet fighters were kept. And as far as I know, I might be wrong, someone might correct me, but it was the only part of Montenegro that was actually bombed by the Americans when the war was going on. For the most part, Montenegro was really not affected by most of the bad things that happened in the war, not like Croatia or Bosnia were. But because there were fighter jets that were stationed in this cave that was dug into the hillside, it was bombed, and that cave was now converted to a cellar for the wine. And it's actually kind of a really neat place to visit, and they do wine tastings there. And they also have a tower in the middle of the vineyard that you can climb up and get a view of the entire valley and everything surrounded and all the plants. As you know, I've done a couple of episodes on the show for UNESCO World Heritage Sites, one of the things I'm known for. So I wanted to visit the UNESCO site in Montenegro that I hadn't visited before. Well, actually, I should say there was one and a half I hadn't visited before. There was one I kind of sort of visited in an aborted attempt in 2016 when I ran into a snow pile in late April. So I had to go back. That's Dumitor National Park, which I'll talk about in a moment. And the other was, it's a cereal site, which is located in Montenegro, Croatia, Bosnia, and Serbia.
Okay.
Which are called Stetsi, which are these ancient medieval tombstones. And when my guide and I went out, he had no idea where this was. He's lived in Montenegro his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So all I had was the map, which is on World Heritage Site, singular.org.
Yeah.
And they have a fantastic map of World Heritage Sites. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times several sites are called serial sites where there's many different locations spread around all over. And they have the best map on the internet for finding out where some of these are. And it's a relatively new site. I think it was just inscribed a year or two ago. So we went out to find this site, which is not far from Dumitor National Park, which is also a UNESCO site. But we were literally driving tracks through the snow to find this place. And I'm like, okay, I think this little hill up here is where it is. There were no signs, no nothing. There was just a set of footprints in the snow. So somebody else had done the same thing. So we got out of the car, we walked up in the snow, and sure enough, there were these Stetsi, these tombstone up on this hill. No signs, no visitor center or anything. And it was kind of neat. And the really neat thing was, I can share this picture with you as well. The snow was actually filling in. So like there's like rock carving.
Right, sure.
It was actually filling in the area of some of the rock carvings, which really brought out what the carving was. And if we hadn't been there in the winter, we probably wouldn't have seen it.
Now, looking at your pictures and looking at some of the pictures at the World Heritage Site for that, I think I may have seen these in Bosnia. And you say it extends into Bosnia because we stopped on our way between one of the cities in Bosnia, Mostar, and Dubrovnik out of the middle of nowhere at one of these old medieval cemeteries. They're just fascinating. and they're around.
Yeah, you probably did. Montenegro, I think, while there are some of them in Montenegro, mm-hmm. the biggest number, I'm pretty sure, are in Bosnia.
Interesting.
Bosnia, and I think Montenegro has the smallest number. I think there are only two or three in Montenegro.
Okay.
But this was my best chance to do it, so jumped at it. And it's also next to Dumitor National Park, which is another way to cross two off at the same time. There was a second one, which we tried to visit, which was only a few miles away, but we were in a car that was not prepared for snow. So we called it a day and backed out of it.
Interesting.
Dumitor National Park. So there are three World Heritage Sites in Montenegro, mm-hmm. Bay of Fodor, as I mentioned, the Stesi, which are all over the Balkans, and then Dumitor National Park, which was the aborted one I tried to visit in 2016. I drove a car at the time from Sarajevo up the windy back roads, up the Piva River, which is one of the biggest gorges in the world in northern Montenegro.
Oh, okay.
Well worth visiting. Really, really impressive. And there's a really big dam there. And that drive, if you've ever been on one of those drives where the left-hand side is basically like 1,000 feet down.
Oh, yeah.
You turn the car the wrong way, you die. But really neat, especially when you cross the dam, which is a bridge. There's a parking area kind of at the end of it, so you can walk back over the dam and take pictures. It's a really neat trip. And I think it really, there you kind of really get the feeling, and in the national park, this is a very mountainous country. And with the exception mm-hmm. of that valley around Podgorica, it's pretty much mountains everywhere. I mean, it really, in Montenegro is true. They're not lying about it. But Dumitor National Park, so we were there in February. You are up in elevation, and it's a popular ski resort. So that's actually one of their busier times of the year. I think the actual week we were there was not a very busy time. There was some stuff closed down because of school and other things. But in general, it's a very popular thing. And then in the summer as well, it's a popular place for people to go hiking and things like that. But those are the highlights of Montenegro. You have the bay, the coast, the lake, the capital, and the park, and all the mountains in between.
Okay. And this seems like renting a car to get around, as long as you don't mind driving in windy roads, is probably the best option.
Yes. There are certainly going to be day trips if mm-hmm. you are in a place like Herceg-Novi, Kotor,
sure.
or Budva, the main tourist towns. And like I said, the country is small enough where you can do day tours anywhere. And the nice part about being in Herceg-Novi is that, like I said, you're equal distance roughly from Kotor, from Dubrovnik, and a little bit further out from Mostar in Bosnia. So it's a great central location to kind of visit all of these places.
Well, and I'm curious, here in 2018, when we're recording this, I know that Kotor and the coastline, as you say, get a fair amount of tourism already. As you get inland, do you see a difference in tourism infrastructure and how ready they are for travelers?
Yes. I don't think the interior of Montenegro gets nearly the tourists mm-hmm. that the coast does. And I should say a lot of that tourism is definitely cruise ship.
Sure. Yeah.
So, but to give you an idea, I don't think there is a fast food restaurant, like a global fast food chain mm-hmm. anywhere in the country.
Oh, really? Anywhere in
There's
the country.
There's no McDonald's.
Okay.
There is a Hilton.
Okay.
In the capital, and that is it. There's no other hotel chains anywhere in the country. So I think that kind of gives you a feel for the tourism development level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's definitely there. There are smaller hotels and guest houses. You know, it's not like it doesn't exist or anything.
Right.
That level of the mass tourism really hasn't hit yet. And I would not be surprised within the next 5 years, certainly the next 10, that you're going to start to see more of that, especially along the coast. I'm kind of surprised you don't see it already, to be real honest.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely think you will. And like I said, with the one and only resort coming in, that is kind of a global brand, albeit a very high-end brand.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I think, sort of the first thing. But I would expect that there's a lot more of it that's going to be happening. One other thing I should note is that the prices on Airbnb are really affordable.
Okay.
One of the guys I was talking to actually owns a home up in the hills above Herceg-Novi. And a villa with a pool, with a fantastic view of the bay and everything else. I think it was $50 a night.
Okay.
So there are some really good Airbnb deals to be had if you search around. I can't speak to a lot of the hotels. The place I stayed, Igalo, I-G-A-L-O, it's like a suburb of Herzegovina. It's like right attached to it, a little bit up the road towards the Croatian border. The Igalo Institute is where I stayed, and that's that 70s era.
Right.
If you're actually interested in that sort of communist era kitsch, I would actually stay there a couple nights because it's really interesting. It is not a five-star experience by any stretch, but if you kind of want to get a feel for what it was like, that actually is not a bad, and it's a huge place. I mean, they have a lot of rooms. So unless there is a special event going on, which there was actually when I was there because of Mimosa Festival, I don't think it selling out is going to be a huge problem. English is moderately spoken.
Okay.
Everywhere you go. I wouldn't say it's fluent like you're going to see in some other places in Europe, but most people can speak it enough to, I want to eat, I want to take a taxi here, that kind of stuff. You should be able to get by fine. I would say that's the degree of fluency that you'll have. Not a problem getting around, but I don't think that there's an expectation that you're going to speak Serbian.
No, usually not. And the road signage wasn't a problem in terms of navigating out to some of the national parks and things like that?
Not at all. In fact, I used Google Maps all the time, and I had T-Mobile, which is the American mobile provider, and I was able to get free roaming and didn't have a problem all over Montenegro.
Okay. What surprised you about Montenegro?
How the tourism infrastructure really hasn't taken off. Like, there isn't a McDonald's. I found that fascinating. I understand it's the former Yugoslav Republic, or it's a former Yugoslavian Republic,
right.
But it's not like the third world. It's no different than a lot of other parts of Europe. And I'm kind of shocked that a lot of these large brands haven't moved in here yet. And while it is getting the cruise ships, I don't know. I think it's kind of right at that point. If it wasn't for the fact that the Russians already moved in and bought a lot of the land, I think it would be a great investment.
Interesting. Anything else we want to cover before we get to my wrap-up questions?
I don't think people actually are all that keen about talking about the war.
Okay.
I think that's kind of an American thing where we love talking about that stuff, like going to Germany and talking about World War II, whereas I don't think they really care to talk about it a whole lot. But they're definitely very proud. And I think in a lot of places, you know, a lot of people asking me, you know, what I thought of Montenegro. And it's a really great country. And definitely going to go back there again. It's kind of tucked away. And I think, like I said at the start of the show, Montenegro in particular, but the whole Balkans in general, I think are going to be the next big thing in Europe because it's so affordable and it's so beautiful.
Right.
And you know how a lot of places kind of go through a stage where at first it's backpackers?
Right. Yeah.
Thailand, maybe, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, was kind of a backpacker destination. And then it eventually develops and you get the high-end resorts. I think we're maybe, you know, a little bit past that backpacker stage, but not the fully developed, full-blown tourism infrastructure of everything else. I should make one correction. There is one global chain. There's a Hard Rock Cafe.
Oh, really? Okay.
In Podgorica, yeah.
Okay.
Which is the one thing that kind of surprised me.
And I think you have already mentioned it, but I'm not sure which of all the different ones you've mentioned, if you were standing at the prettiest spot and I asked you where you were standing, what you were looking at, which one that you mentioned would you be at?
The viewpoint in Skadar Lake.
Okay. That was where I gathered, but you'd also mentioned the hill above Kotor and the gorge up in the northern part of the country. So, okay.
The hill above Kotor really does give you a great view, but this one particular view, and I can show you the photo.
Yep.
In fact, I can even give you the GPS coordinates or the show notes because it really is, if anyone's looking, it's called the Pavlova Strana Viewpoint. That's what it is in Google Maps.
Okay.
P-A-V-L-O-V-A S-T-R-A-N-A Viewpoint. And it's gorgeous. I mean, it's kind of like this bend in the river and then one of the arms of the river looks up this view and it's great. And if you're a photographer or of any interest in photography, you need to, and again, you can drive there no problem from wherever you're staying. It's midway roughly between, say, Kotor and Budva and Podgorica. So you can easily pull off the side of the road, go visit it.
And one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Montenegro.
It had to have been everyone speaking the same language, but having no word for the language. Because everyone calls it their own language, but it for all practical purposes, is the same language. And there's no word to describe it. I mean, I guess Serbo-Croatian is kind of what you'd call it.
But you will get in trouble using that.
Yeah. But yeah, it's also spoken in Montenegro and it's also spoken in Bosnia. So.
Okay. And if you had to summarize Montenegro in three words, what three words would you use?
Mountainous. Beautiful.
Okay.
And affordable.
Excellent. And Gary, if we're going to send them to one particular post on everything-everywhere.com for your best post on Montenegro, where are we going to send them?
Probably just go to my Montenegro landing page.
Okay.
Just go to everything-everywhere.com/travel-to-Montenegro, or just type in Montenegro and search for it in my website. Or
we'll put a link in the show notes. We'll save you work here. Great. Gary, thank you so much for coming back on the show. It's not like we don't talk that often, but it's always a pleasure to have you on Amateur Traveler. And thank you for sharing with us your love for Montenegro.
Thank you for having me.
In news of the community, I heard from Deborah about the recent show we did on the Yucatan. Just listen. Great episode. Made me want to go back. You left out the ruins at Ekbalam, though, near Valladolid. Wonderful pyramid you can climb with amazing Mayan carvings, not crowded at all, and they have a cenote. Deborah, we left out a lot of Mayan ruins and a lot of cenotes, just literally thousands, but thanks, I did not know that one. And then I heard from a former guest and friend of the show, Jeff Ulfs, about the episode we did on Madagascar. He gave a rather long feedback, so I'm going to put the whole feedback in the show notes and also in the lyrics of this episode. But I did want to call out one of the things that he mentioned, which we didn't actually talk about in the show, and that's deforestation. It says 92% of the country's forests have been cut down for agricultural land. You see fields and terraced hillsides everywhere. There were only two paved national roads, but despite being paved, they are deteriorating. Reading. The average speed is 30 miles per hour. Every major city had police checkpoints going into and out of the city looking for various permits and smuggled goods. We passed through a town south of Tana called Ambotolampi, where they recycle aluminum into pots and pans. Further south is Ambositra, known for its wood carvings, including a totem pole-like carving called an aloalo. And further south in Ambohimahasoa, and I swear that Jeff sent me these names just to hear me pronounce them. We had lunch there with a performance of Malagasy dancing and music called Mfirigasi. And then I'll put the rest of the show notes where Jeff is talking about some of the history of the country. But yeah, we didn't actually bring up the deforestation. It is a definite issue in Madagascar. And the other thing that I would refer you to, if you're interested in going there, there was a really good episode that Anthony Bourdain did on one of his more recent shows about Madagascar. He obviously talks about the food, but he also talked about some of the other issues that are facing the country. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home. And further south in Ambohimahasoa.